is Christmas morning for Natalie. This is a very special day that I have personally been waiting for. I mean, this has been 10 years in the making. Because 10 years ago, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, 10 years ago, little, sweet, depressed, sad, lost, lonely Natalie left Toronto and said, I don't know anything, but I know that I'm unhappy and I need a big change in my life. And I got on a plane and I flew to Los Angeles and I stayed in this Craigslist apartment with this roommate and I rented a car and I said, I don't know what is going on with my life, but I know I need a change. And my very first day waking up in Los Angeles, I wandered down a street, not knowing where I was, but just following the palm trees. And I ended up turning my head and seeing a building that said Yoga Blend. And I had never done a yoga class in my life. And I thought yoga was for hippies and really weird people. And I was like, I'm just sad enough to give it a try. And so I walked in the door and I was very angry. And I said, I guess I have to rent a mat and it probably costs money. And the person at the desk said, it's on us. Go on in. And I said, I've never done yoga before and I don't know what I'm doing. She said, the teacher will help you. It'll be fine. And I walked in, I put my mat down, and all of a sudden I heard this voice of this Southern woman. Hi, y'all. Welcome to yoga. And I looked at her and I said, I'm probably going to lie here the whole time. And she said, well, that would be you doing amazing yoga. And I did lay in that class and cried the entire time. I did not move off my mat. I just laid there and cried. And I had never felt better. And after that class, this same teacher said, I have a yoga teacher training coming up. And I said, I'm signing up.
After your very first yoga class. You're like, yep, I'll teach this.
So I was like,
that's commitment right there.
I said, I don't know what this yoga is all about, but whatever this woman is drinking, eating, doing, I need to know. And so, ladies and gentlemen, here with us today is that woman, my teacher, my guru, who I have talked to you about numerous times, Christy Marsden!
Yay! Oh my gosh, that story is so good, Natalie. Oh, I love you so much. Thank you so much, and Kristen, for having me. It's so wonderful to be here with you. And I remember that, you know, and I remember, like, you were committed. And I always think of, like, when you said that, I was thinking of the first sutra is basically like, okay, just stop what you're doing and do something else. Like, make the commitment right now. And then it's like, I don't even know what I just committed to, but I'm in, you know, like, it's like, what is it? What did I just commit to? I have no idea. Yes. And that was you. You were like, I don't, I'm just going to do it. And you did. And you dove right in. And you're one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. And I love you with all my heart. And I have been very blessed to be able to watch you grow and learn and become, you know, the amazing version of yourself that has always been there. You know, you just had to get out of your own way
a little bit. Oh, man. Yeah, Christy saw me in the 26-year-old Natalie, who was very, very mad at herself and mad at the world. And so really these tools that I learned, and I can't believe that was 10 years ago, was 10 years ago this past month. So being here again 10 years later has been really reflective for me. So this is 10 years in the making. This is so special. But really, the tools that you taught me, there have been so many times where the inner voice is so angry and critical and caught in its conditioning and the stories of the past. And part of my healing, a huge part of my healing of becoming who I am today, was starting to hear your voice saying some very different things. And it took time, you know, and it was clunky at first.
Yeah,
and,
as it is.
you know, over time, over 10 years, it has led me to such a different place. So I'm so happy that you're here.
Yeah,
to like,
me too.
I was saying to Christy earlier, the podcast listeners keep hearing me say, Christy says, Christy says, Christy says. So now they get to hear what you say.
I love it. That's so good. You know, and what you bring up is such a, I think such a great point is that one of my teachers used to say, he's like, if everything we thought in our everyday life was, I am incredibly smart and talented and successful, and the universe is conspiring in my favor at all times, we wouldn't need yoga, you know, like if we were just constantly in that state where we trusted the ebb and the flow and we knew that we had the strength and the courage to overcome and, you know, we were able to understand the lessons and the growth, like, but that's where yoga can be super helpful because what you said was I had these things in my mind, these words and these programs and whatever it is, conditions from, you know, teachers and parents and friends and whatever it is, but we have to switch the direction, you know, of where our mind goes. It's the tool of perception. That's all it is. And we think the mind's who we are, and that's where we get lost. But if we can go, no, it's a tool. It's literally a tool. And it whatever we put it towards, that's what it gets good at. So we just turn it. Like literally, I think of like a submarine coming up with its little, you know, and turning like, oh, if I look this way, it's you're terrible, you're not enough, you know, oh, everything is, you know, but all you have to do is just keep you know, like grease the thing until it turns this way. And then it's looking at the universe is conspiring in my favor. You know, people love me and they care. And I trust the people that say, you know, I appreciate you and I'm grateful for, you know, you just keep putting your mind there until eventually it stays there more often. And it may occasionally when it needs a little maintenance or something really hard happens in life, it may turn back the other way, which that's what yoga talks about too. There's all these interruptions that come that will cause the old habit to turn like the back towards where we used to be. And so we just keep, you know, we have to up our practice in those times and really turn it back towards where we want. So yeah. And I love that you're like, okay, over time it does work, right? Your mind stays more in that direction than not.
And I love that you describe it as a tool. I think many people think the ego is bad, the mind is bad, but you know, the mind can certainly do harmful things.
Totally.
It can be a weapon that is against you and it can also be for you.
Absolutely.
And it's just how you use it that changes it.
Yeah, it has the greatest potential for causing suffering and it has the greatest potential for causing joy. I mean, that's, yeah.
And I think our conditioning can be so sneaky sometimes, right? Like all of those programs can be sneaky the way that they come in.
Yes.
Right? So that you can have times in your life where you're really focused and your submarine looking glass is like really focused. And then all of a sudden, without realizing it, you can wake up one morning and find yourself, oh, how did I get back looking over there?
Right.
Right? And you don't even realize that it turned without you noticing.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that's where people get super frustrated too, because, and I was just talking about this in a training recently, is that we understand something and it makes perfect sense. We get it. We feel it in our heart. It lights us up like a firecracker and we're like, yes. However, we can't maintain it. And so then we feel not spiritual enough, then we're not good enough, and that, oh, we're not actually, you know, and I was telling someone, I was like, here's the thing, I've been at it for 23 years. I still have to work at it constantly because life is always changing. And we can get better at adapting to the change, but we still have to bear, you know what I mean? Like we have to be prepared for the impact of change. And so, yes, we can get better at it, but we still will drift, right? Even if we've been doing it for 50 years. Someone who's super honest about it, you know, realizes it's, you still drift. You just have to pull it back. And maybe the mess is not as big and the cleanup is a little easier and the, you know, there's not as much devastation in your path. Right? Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, wow, I didn't make that much of a mess. I can just clean up a little bit and get back on track, right? Doesn't mean you're bad. Because there was one thing I was talking about because someone said, I feel like this pattern, I get it and I understand it and it goes away for a while and then it comes back and I just don't feel like I'm actually good enough and all the things we had that. And I said, well, what yoga talks about is that our old patterns and samskaras and they're, you know, patterns that have left on us, impressions on us, whether it's habits or behaviors or thoughts or whatever, don't ever go away. They only lie dormant. And the reason that they lie dormant instead of going away is to keep you super present. Because if they went away, you would forget, right? Mm. So they lie dormant and they wait and they'll never come back if you keep going, or they won't come back full force, right? They can come back a little bit just to say, hey, I'm still here. Stay present. Do your work. But if you stop doing the work, they're there to take over again. They're ready. It's like they wait in the wings, like, she's not looking. Get in there!
I love right. it when you always say, like, warning, leaving the path of yoga. Yeah, you're it's like a big siren.
Yeah.
Like, you're hey, leaving. Wake up. Yes. You're, you know, it's like when you're driving on the highway and you start to veer off and you get those.
Totally. And we don't think about that, too, is that, like, you know, things like, I always say, if you get super confident in your state of mind, like the way that, then that is a sign that you're about to drift. Because if you get super like, oh, I got this, warning, you could be leaving the state of yoga. Because it's like, oh, you know, it's like this thinking that you've got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just when we get sick or, you know, when we're fatigued mentally, you know, when you're super fatigued and you're trying to work something out, that's not the best time. You start to drift and you lose confidence and, you know, you start to question yourself. Or when you're ill, like when I get sick, I think, oh my gosh, I'll never feel good again the rest of my life.
Yes.
And it's like,
yes.
Every time I've gotten sick, I get better. Why am I in that space? But that's one of the things that causes us to drift. And when we become super judgmental or sort of in our stance of our mind. And those are kind of signs. They're warnings to let us know, hey, you might want to up your practice, you know, and your practice may be just laying in bed and resting if you're sick, right? Just being super present to healing, you know? So yeah, I mean, there's things that we can do, but then also we're human, you know, and it's going to happen. We're going to drift sometimes.
And I love that you describe up your practice or more practice, because you are the first person who ever taught me about a morning practice, and Kristen and I preach morning practice like it is our number one commandment. But I also love that when we say morning practice or when we say yoga, we're not just talking about get up and do yoga poses. No. That there is a plethora of practice, and really discerning what the right practice is for you depending on where you're at and what that moment is.
Totally. And I think that that's something that gets a lot of people, and it did for me too. It kept me from practicing because I was like, well, if it's not an hour and I'm not doing all these poses and I'm not doing what I do in a class, then it's not valuable or it's not worth it. And when I learned that, no, like there's different practices for different, like for me, my thoughts are very loud. Mm-hmm. Like I think loud. Just like I talk, just like I walk, you know, like I'm just loud.
You never.
I know people are like, you do yoga? I'm like, oh yeah, this is me subdued.
this is Christy on yoga.
Yeah, this is Christy on yoga. Yeah, it's true because I mean, I'm just like, bah! But it, you know, it keeps me more, because my thoughts are so loud, sometimes I need chanting because they're louder. Like that's louder than my thoughts. Do you know?
Yes.
Is that
can
the
you turn
one?
That? Yeah.
I was like, what is this?
Like,
I just left the thing open. That's so funny. The spout for the water. It's just dripping everywhere. That's fine. Thank
That's
you.
What happens when you're live, friends. Yeah. Like, anything can happen.
Guess what? We're just in the flow.
Right.
In
the,
exactly. The water has to pour.
I was like, is that dripping?
I know. I heard it too. And I was like, and I knew what I was thinking. I was like, oh, she has a beautiful fountain in the other room. She has a beautiful flowing fountain.
Well, Kristen and I often say that creativity and inspiration is like, you tap into the universe, to divine, to the source of love, to nature, to your higher self, and it's like you turn the faucet on, and then the creativity, the energy flows, and then you don't have to work that hard because you just drink the water that shows up.
That's what I'm always talking to writers about is part of practice, right? This sitting down and putting your hands on the keyboard is starting to learn that you just turn that spout and the divine will flow through you.
It'll
flow through your fingers.
And you have to practice. I mean, you just said it. That's the key. And I will sit and talk to someone and they're like, well, I understand this and I understand that. But what do I do? I'm like, practice. I mean, my answer is always you have to practice. This stuff is just all, if we just continue to think that by understanding it as a concept, we should be able to embody it, we will never, ever feel peace.
Yes.
We have to physically do the work, and not physically like asana, but you like have to do something. Yoga is a practice of action. And if we want to create something, or if we want, we have to act. We can't just think our way into it. Thinking is great. It starts the process. Knowing our target, knowing the vision, that's great. We have all these directions we could go. We choose a direction. Awesome. But if we don't actually start walking towards it, you know, the journey is part of it. Like that is the destination. It's because we act as if now, and then along the way, we're going to grow and adapt and change. But if we don't actually apply the effort, then it just becomes a thought. And then we get caught in that, I'm not good enough. It'll never happen for me. Why is this not working? And then we get bitter and we get a little bit like cynical and things like that. So it's about the practice. You have to show up, put your hands on the keyboard. You have to actually, whether it's chanting or meditation or breath work or, you know, writing. So I have a ritual, and ritual's a big part of it, is just having a morning ritual or an evening ritual. If that works better, I'm like, yes, please give yourself permission to do it at night, you know, if that's better for you and your family. But have a ritual that is super, it connects you to the physicality. It connects you to that root, so you feel super secure, and then from there the creativity blossoms because you have an anchor and you feel stable. But if we don't have that anchor, we feel a sort of floaty and lost in ideas and thought, right? So we get that anchor of a ritual, and you imagine a wheel like boom, you know, it's grinding you deeper into the earth to give you the ability to manifest. So you pull that down from thought into the physical world, and ritual is sort of the gateway for that. So practicing is key. You know, you have to do something. And like I was saying, my thoughts are super loud. Chanting is super helpful for me because every time I think a negative, what? Rom, or whatever. It's like, what was I saying? Rom. It was like, what, rom? You know, like it's just like constantly getting my thoughts to be quiet. But a ritual I love to do in the morning is I get up and I'll make this really like super foodie coffee drink with all sorts of fat in it. It's delicious. And then I write. I write 3 pages every day. I've been doing it for years. And then I'll do my practice. I'll like pull a card just to, you know, give me something to think about or meditate on, and I'll move a little bit maybe, or sometimes I'll just chant for a few minutes but something always anchors me into I am here, I have a body, you know, I'm breathing, I'm connecting to that inspiration, you know, through the breath, even if it's 5 minutes. Mm. It's really important. So yeah.
I think it's so dangerous in today's world that so many of us wake up in the first thing you go to is your email, your phone, your social media, your technology. And it's almost like the first thing you do in the day is abandon yourself and the wisdom of yourself to go see what someone else is doing or what outer stimulus there is. And so part of why we talk about the importance of a morning practice, even if it's 3 minutes, even if it's 5 minutes, is just what's going on with me first.
Yes.
You know, where am I at? Where's my breath at? Oh, what's my body feel like? Oh, when I stretch or move this way, even if I'm still in bed, what does that feel like today? Is it different than yesterday? Just being so more curious about what's going on inside than this constant obsession with what's going on outside.
Absolutely. 100%.
And I think it anchors you in the sacred. So when you start to see that relationship first and foremost, then you can extend that to everything that you also do in your day is sacred, right?
Absolutely.
That every conversation takes on the quality of being mindful that it's sacred.
Yep.
Or whatever you're doing as your dharma in the world, you're just aware of it in a different way. So it's like a way of anchoring and connecting. And I feel like our souls get really, really loud when we aren't in active conversation with them.
Yep. Yeah. For sure. And I think that, you know, it's easy to make excuses, you know, well, I have this and I have that and I've got this responsibility and that, you know, and we're taught that martyrdom is the way to salvation.
Preach. Preach. Yes.
So to do that is an act of selfishness. Mm-hmm. If you put yourself first, then you're not truly, right?
Mm.
Your work is not valuable because
that's a fascinating conditioning.
Yeah.
That you, if martyrdom is the way to salvation, then putting yourself first or doing self-care, what does that lead to? Damnation?
Right. Like, that's kind of the messaging that's never maybe exactly put that way, but that is the message saying this is the way to salvation.
Yeah.
You know, so when we're taught that and then no one's taught. I mean, and especially I think of mothers because I'm a mother. And so many, you know, I saw this just growing up, is that the mothers always put everyone first.
Yes.
Like, always. And so mothers birthed everyone on this planet. So it's starting with, you know, I think it's super important to give the mother, like for me, my son knows that even when he was a little child, he could come in there when I was doing my practice. I would get all the tarot cards out for him. He'd light incense with me. He'd ring bells, you know, like, oh, I want to, you know. And he would just, I made him a part of it because I think so often we try to make excuses. And I don't know what that is. I did it my whole life is knowing that something made me feel better, but then not doing it somehow. And it's like this little self-worth thing. Like, am I not actually worth giving myself that thing that helps me to, because again, martyrdom and the whole thing of like, oh, I need to serve others. And that's, you know, it's my ego and, you know, being selfish and things like that. But, you know, I had to really learn, and the yoga practice has helped me, but to include the kids.
Yeah.
Just, and I will say to, you know, my son now, even at this age, like, he knows. I mean, I don't even have to now because he's 8. But, you know, he can stay in there, play Legos. He can color. He can, you know, whatever. But I'm going to have my time. And he's always welcome into it. And I think sometimes people are like, oh, I have to be sitting in this perfect, it has to be this perfect environment, and it has to be completely distraction-free. Really? Is life like that ever? So now you're setting yourself up. You're making the excuse. If the conditions aren't right, then I can't do self-care. Well, guess what? You're never going to have the perfect conditions. Never. So that's just a way to stay in a lower vibration, a way to stay in your patterns of behavior and complain about it and not get what you want and be the victim saying that, well, life is not working out for me.
Yep.
Well, and a lot of artists fall into that trap. Like, I can be an artist once these conditions are met.
Yes. Totally.
Once I get an agent, or once I have more money, or once I have more jobs, or
more free time.
Right.
Yes,
and it's like
sure.
The art, the muse is always like, I'm right here. Yeah. I'm right here. I don't need anything. I like literally put a paintbrush in my hand. We're good to go.
Yeah.
But we keep thinking, well, let me move around the conditions, the outer world, to make it that moment. The moment never comes.
Right.
There's this quote that Michael Beckwith said that as soon as we think we need circumstances to be different, we've projected our personal power out into the world. Yes. And so instead of knowing that our power is within, we think it's out there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's so important because a lot of suffering comes from trying to control the outside world. Right? And
Woo!
That's where we can't let go.
Woo! can we just say that again? A lot of suffering comes. It's like all the suffering comes from trying to control the outer world. And it ain't never going to happen.
And it's never going to happen. So it's just this cycle that will continue unless you start to turn the attention in and say, well, no matter what, I'm going to get up and take 2 to 3 minutes for myself. Just to start. And then eventually it becomes such a part of you that you understand the value of it and you're seeing the results play out in your life that the conditions aren't changing, but you and your participation in it is drastically different.
Mm.
So then you start investing more because then you realize the power to create comes from drawing the energy in and then sharing that light with the world. Like,
right.
You know, so yeah.
So Christy, I have just realized that we were so excited to like hear everything you had to say. We didn't even ask you anything about yourself and your journey or how you got here.
Hey, let's just get right to the point.
So
that's amazing.
But now people want to know. Now they're like,
now they're like, who is this woman?
How did this happen?
So
that's
tell
amazing.
Us. So tell us how you, because I know you weren't like coming out of the womb doing yoga,
no.
Knowing these tools.
Listen, I still say all the time, the reason I think, and I can say it because, damn it, I have worked for it. I can say the reason I'm a great teacher is because I was terrible at learning stuff.
Oh.
Like, I am not at all that person that everything came easy. It looked like it on the outside because I grew up in the South. And I grew up in the 70s, you know, I grew up, there's no internet, and there was, you know, it was a very specific belief system, and that was taught, and, you know, there is just a very conservative values and things like that, and I had things that I didn't understand, and a lot of questions and confusion about the nature of the universe, and I would think about it, but then there would be this sort of really dogmatic teachings that was confusing to me, and so I started to sort of question who I was in relation to my thoughts and what other people thought I should be and their ideas of what, you know, made a good person. And it got very confusing. And so, but on the outside, I projected this beautiful image of this perfect child who was a straight A student, nice to everyone. And on the inside, there was misalignment happening on a regular basis.
Mm.
You know, thoughts not lining up with actions, not lining up with words, not lining up with feelings. Everything was just, I didn't know how to organize it. And so it really led for a very confusing and often destructive path, you know, experimenting with, you know, drugs and alcohol and things like that. And just not knowing really how to find center, like not how to find where things I knew or I would get glimpses of as a little girl, these images or flashes of feelings that I was like, what's that? Like, I want that. But I didn't even know what that was. But I knew it was something that I wanted to feel because I would get a moment of it. And I think that now, being doing yoga for so long, that was Purusha giving me a little spark. Like, this is possible. Whatever this is. And so growing up, you know, I became more and more a version of what everybody else told me I was.
Mm.
And so I lost the ability to understand what was the truth for me. Like, I didn't even know what that meant. And so I got super lost, like, in trying to do the things that I thought were good and what I thought love was, you know. Because when I met an ex from way back when I was young, right, I met him, gosh, maybe a year or two before I started yoga.
Mm.
But he'd already hooked me, you know what I mean, before. And basically, by being able to express in words what I had only thought about and couldn't organize in my life, he was able to do that in words and communication, and I thought that was love, and went down that path. Again, someone else's truth and things like that. So I started yoga, and I felt like all of a sudden I had a language for my soul. Like, I had something that could help me put together the puzzle pieces that had been sort of flashing in my mind my whole life. But I had a lot of work to do. I mean, I had 22 years of, you know, 23 years of just unraveling, you know, and that's a lot. Because now I've been, I've officially been at yoga for half my life.
Oh,
I just realized that just now. Oh. When I said 23 years, I was like, whoa, it's been 20, so half my life has been dedicated to this practice.
Wow.
Long, one of the longest term relationships I've ever had,
uh-huh.
Right? So, you know, I felt like I finally had this thing that I understood. And it wasn't like I started yoga and everything made sense and my life started getting better. It got worse. Like, it was because all of a sudden now I'm seeing stuff and I'm confused by it and it's not matching what other people are saying and I'm not living in alignment. My actions aren't lining up with what I'm learning and know to be true. And so I become this sort of version of myself that is completely, like, almost separate, like a dual, you know, a split of, like, I know I want to be this, but my patterning and conditioning and habits are so strongly rooted that I'm not able to. So for me, it was a lot of work. And I went down really far the other direction. And it's almost like I had to kind of hit rock bottom of, like, wow, the yoga has only opened that gateway up for me to keep going the way I was going. You know, like, and then all of a sudden I realized that's not at all where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had to start walking back the other way and figure it out. So it was never easy. None of this was ever, not out of the womb. My outgoing personality was the easiest thing for me. Like, I've always just been super friendly and comfortable around people. That was the one thing. But everything else was hard work. Everything else to get my thoughts and my actions and my, you know, physical body, it was always a challenge. And, you know, it's amazing what people, when they say, oh, your immune system is so weak, you know what happens when you don't get sleep. You're going to get sick. You always get sick when you don't get enough sleep. When you're told that enough,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right? You
right.
know. And so all of this, it was like a lot of undoing that I had to do. So yoga was a really, and I, like I say, that's why I feel like I'm a teacher for a lot of people, is because I can be like, I have been there and I am right there beside you. I'm no better. All I can say is there's a rock. Watch out for that.
Yes.
Like, I'm no better than, other than I just might be one step ahead of you and can tell you to don't fall in that crevice. Go around it. Like, do this. Try to, you know, chant your way over that one or whatever it is, you know? Because to me, life is not super easy. It can be in the flow and it can be deeply connected to your truest self, but it requires effort, you know? And that, you know, there's the balance of finding effort and ease. So I started yoga and had to work my way out of a hole. And then I started to see what was possible and I started to get things lined up a little bit and my actions started lining up with my words and I started to understand what the truth of my expression, like what that even meant and how to access that. And, like, you know, when I started working with the chakras, I had such a, you know, imbalanced fifth chakra because of communication. My truth was never priority for me. You know, it was everybody else's truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused all kinds of physical dysfunction and then all kinds of relationship dysfunction as well. So, you know, it was really a long process. And I, like I said, I've gotten better. My messes are way less messy. They can be cleaned up a lot quicker. I get back on track. You know, I still have moments. I spiral down, but I don't ever feel like, oh my gosh, I'll never be able to get back out.
Mm.
Where I used to feel that, like, sort of desperation. But now I'm like, okay, I'm here. Just roll with it for a minute and then get back on track, you know? Mm. So yeah.
Well, and from my experience of being your student for 10 years now, which like, I can't believe it's been that, is there has never, ever, ever once been a time where I've ever gone through anything where you've said, well, I know nothing about that. I'm over here on the mountain. You know? Like, every single thing. And this is, I've been through 2 teacher trainings with you and just personally knowing you. There's not a single thing that any single person I have ever seen you teach has said that your response has been anything other than, oh, I know that. I get you. I hear you. I know what that's like. Here's how it shows up in my life. Here's how I'm still working on that thing too. And so for me, what has made you such a powerful presence in my life and a powerful teacher is that your level of honesty in a world that is so about, let me try to show people how great I am,
yes,
and how good I have it, and my social media persona is exactly who I am, and that's how my life is all the time. Like, let me whitewash everything and just make everyone believe I got this.
Yeah.
And your whole way of being in the whole 10 years I have known you is, oh, I do not got this. I so do not have this, and here's what I'm learning, and here's what I'm trying, and here's what my practice around it is. And I have seen you come through some of the most challenging circumstances that anyone could ever imagine going through. And I have never seen you fall into a trap of victimhood around any of it. You are always saying, well, there's life being life,
mm-hmm,
and here's me doing my best. And how I have watched you use these tools imperfectly, just in process, has always made me believe about myself that, like, no matter how bad it gets, it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. And that means the world to me, because I feel like what you're spot on with what you said is people put up this persona, and that's why people suffer, is because they think, I'll never be that.
Mm.
Right? And then they're not willing to use the tools or whatever. And I can honestly say, you know, I've gotten so much better at it. My life has gotten so much better. And so I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep doing the work no matter how hard it is. And sometimes it feels frustrating and it feels unfair or whatever. Sometimes I'm like that's just rude. You know, like, I am a good person out here working my butt off. Why are you throwing this at me? And it's like, it's not personal. It's just happening. And, you know, I feel like, you know, we're out there in this cosmic game of the universe and, you know, you're over here and you're over here. And I'm like, hey, Natalie, here's this tool, you know, the catch, there's something coming at you, you know? And we just have that ability to be in relationship with each other and with the, you know, whatever energies at play in the world, in the universe. And we can use that to harness, you know, our essence, our soul, and make it the vessel as open of a channel as it can to sort of push back on what comes our way and not take it in and knock us off balance so much that we spiral out of alignment with, you know, that essence of who we are. And so I love, because I get students like you, you know, I, being the person I am and doing the work that I do, I get the privilege of being able to go, here's some things for you to shine your light brighter, you know? And so thank you, and you're welcome, and all of it, you know, because I think that being real with each other is where it's at.
Mm.
You know, it's like, hey, there is no part of me that thinks I got this down better than you, but I do have a lot more practice with the tools. That's it. I've been wielding them a lot longer. Let me show you how to use them. You got to work it out for your situation, but here, do this, do that, try that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. People need to feel that they are okay with wherever they're at, you know?
And one thing I would love for you to talk about is time, because I know that you shared when you were, for example, opening your beautiful yoga studio, you know, the time that takes.
And my gosh, I think
many artists, especially, many people want to, okay, I'm going to do something. Why isn't it working yet? Why isn't it finished yet? Like, okay, I'm going to write a script, and then not really wanting to write the shitty first draft. Like, just wanting it to be already the feature film that's winning awards.
And not wanting to do the second draft,
right,
or go through the third draft, or
right,
the fourth, or the fifth,
yeah,
or the sixth, or studio notes.
Right, and so even like you said, you started taking on these tools, life got worse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not like,
for sure,
we start becoming a spiritual being and then life is all of a sudden miraculous. The mess actually is the miracle, but we learn that later down the track.
Totally. Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's a big part of it too, is that using that knowledge from the past that gets us to where we are, we can use that to fuel our future. And we just pull them all into the moment. And we use that going, well, I've gotten through everything that I have done up to this point. Like, why won't I get through whatever comes? So why not dream big, mm-hmm. you know? But it does take time. And that's the thing. We have this attachment to time. We think it's linear, and it's not. It's very cyclical. And it's always sort of doing, because we're orbiting out in space, and we're going around, and a sun, and, you know, moon's going around us. Everything's cyclical and orbital, and it's very easy to get caught in that. Well, there's this, then there's that, then there's this, then there's that. And we think that there's a timeline to it, when it's like, no, you know, there's points on the cycle that you will elevate and have a different perspective. You know, you get a little better footing higher up because you've been climbing sort of your path, but we're never really going in a straight line. And I think that people think, well, I want to write that script. You know, I want to open my studio. I want to do that. I'm like, great. But there's a lot of work and time and effort that's involved in that. And it may look seamless. You know, if someone met me today, they would be like, oh my gosh, so easy for her. Bullshit. Like, it's not, no part of it has been easy. It's been enjoyable and pleasurable in many ways, but I would not use the word easy for anything that I've experienced in my life. So I knew that I wanted to open a yoga studio because I was working in the corporate world a couple of years after I started taking yoga. I mean, it was 8 years before the doors opened. Mm. And it was a lot of like, okay, well, first of all, I'm not mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, or anything prepared. Like, I need to do some work on myself, you know, first of all. And then second of all, you know, I need to plan. Like, I need to organize my thoughts, and I want it to be the best version it can be, instead of just, oh, it's got to be perfect the first time around. Like, I, you know, all of that was the work. You know, it doesn't just like, oh, I want to open a studio. The studio's open. Like, there's a process. And that's writing the first draft is, okay, let me think about what, you know, what would the studio look like? What would it feel like? Like, what kind of classes would I offer? You know, what kind of practices do I want to teach? What are the tools that are important to me? I got to practice those tools. I got to actually do it. So it took a lot of time, you know, and I knew when I opened my first space, it wasn't the final destination of what I had envisioned, but it was a great stopping point to set up camp, you know, and really do good work there and have a small space that was tiny, tiny little space with a bathroom in the middle of the room, you know, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And like, that's okay. Like, it's not, that was my first draft. Well, the first draft was the years leading up and doing the practice. And the second draft was the first little space. The third draft was moving in and then adding teacher training, adding a 300 hour. There's all these different manifestations that come from that seed. And they are all, they take time.
And I love that you said, and I think this is true for all art and all artists, what the studio was less important than the types of practices and feelings that were going to be created in that space. And you couldn't create them out there unless you were doing them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So the time was actually just the time it took for you to cultivate energetically what the studio represented.
Absolutely. And that's with writing too, like, or whatever it is, and acting or whatever. You have to cultivate it within, instead of going, once it's has this particular form, then that's success.
Right.
No, the success comes from within. You know, it's going to come from you doing the work, doing the act as if you are, you know, like, and I think so often we think that in order for it to mean anything, that it has to have this certain look, feel, or whatever.
Result,
or, you know. And yeah, I think that that's super important for people to recognize that you have to put in the effort. And that's where the light comes out, instead of it like being out there and you trying to shape it.
Latch onto
it. Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Will you tell my favorite story, which is when the person drove the car into your studio? This will tell you everything that you need to know about who this woman is.
I have no idea about this story. Wait, a car went into Yoga Blend?
Okay, so when I do a lot of visualization work. And it's amazing. I have seen incredible results by giving people these tools. That is so funny, Natalie, that you want to hear this story. I love it.
I love this story so much.
So visualization is my jam. Like, and I've seen it work for me, I've seen it work for, you know, people. So I had envisioned this studio and the rooms and the bathrooms and the lobby and but I never got to the parking lot. I just didn't think about the park. I just didn't even put it in my visualization at all. I wanted a corner. I wanted good street signage. I got all of it, except for I never even considered the parking lot. Well, what I got was this ginormous pole in the middle of my parking lot. I mean, like, ridiculous, like, laughable, right? You know it's gone now.
I know. The last time I was there, I was like,
where's the pole go?
So when I first moved in, I was like, call the utility. What is it going to take to move that pole? It's terrible. Because I crashed the back of my Jeep. I backed out, hit it. My whole back windshield shattered. So I was like, I put this big bumper around it, this big yellow bumper. I was like, and they said it was going to be $30,000 to remove that pole. I was like, well, okay. Well, I'm going to have to live with the pole.
That's it. The pole stays.
Anyway, now the pole's gone. Great news. But so this poor fella came to my studio and he had a BMW, and some of the BMWs, like when you go into reverse, you know how you have to put the brake on to put it in the gas?
Uh-huh.
Well, you didn't in this car. So he backed out kind of fast in reverse and bumped into this pole. And he panicked because he hit it pretty hard. But I had the bumper around it. But he hit it so hard, so he panicked. And I'm sure he thought he was putting on the brake when he threw it into drive. But instead, he put on the gas all the way to the floor and threw it into drive, catapulted himself through our building.
Oh, my.
I mean, like, boom, the whole foundation, everything kind of moved over. I get the call. It was like my phone at my house rang a certain way. I knew something was up on a Sunday morning. And I remember, you know, who's working the desk was like, Christy, so a car drove through the building. And I'm like, what? Like, I get there. There are two wheels in each bathroom. Like, one wheel. The guy is in the parking lot devastated that his car is in my building. Like, half of it, it's inside. It's crazy. I mean, a poor woman had just walked out. I mean, thank God.
Thank everything. Right?
So now we can laugh because no one got hurt. So the poor guy, I was like, oh my gosh. He was like, he couldn't even look at me. He was freaking out. I'm like, I have put 10 classes in your account.
Christy gives him free yoga. He crashes his car into her building and she goes, honey, it's okay. Yoga on us.
Yeah, because you just, and he couldn't believe, he was stunned. He looked at me and he's like, what? I'm like, I'm so sorry that this happened. Like, I know that you must feel terrible. Like, and he's like, I drove a car into your building. And then I was so like, just, it's fine. We'll fix it. Insurance will handle this. Like, what you're feeling is, I can only imagine how terrible you're feeling right now. And, like, how freaked out you're feeling. And how bad you're feeling. Like, I want you to feel bad. Like, come together. And he was like, and then he kind of softened a little bit. And he's like, well, you know, I just wanted to make my presence known. You know, like, he just kind of relaxed a little bit. Because it was like, okay, she's not going to freak out. I mean, because what are you going to do? Like,
it's already there.
It's there.
The car's in the middle of the studio.
And it literally makes me think, why I love this story so much is there are cars driving into us every day.
All the time.
Every day there is something banging into you. And you can either get mad, be a victim, yell at it, or you can give it free yoga.
That's it.
It's like, and maybe what happens to your life when you take that route might amaze you.
Yeah,
you
know? Just might amaze you.
And that's why I love that story, because it really encompasses your whole energy and who you are. It's like the Southern hospitality.
Well, you know, right
meets
before...
the sense of humor.
Right. Well, you know, right before that happened, the building caught on fire.
The same day?
No, two months prior. We had just gotten it all repaired and fixed. I was like, what is happening? It was so crazy. It was right after my dad died. It was literally my dad died, the building caught on fire, a car drove through it, and then my back went out. It was just like boom, 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 boom. You know, and it's like, wow, thank goodness I have a sense of humor, you know, like.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, the building caught on fire, and somebody was like, it was getting really hot, and they were like checking they unplugged everything, and they called me, and I'm like, yeah. And then they were like, wait, the wall, it feels hot. I kind of hear something, called the fire department. They came the minute they cracked open the wall, it caught a blaze. because the restaurant next to us had been lighting a grill up against our wall. It had been embering for years.
What?
And finally it was, they said, if you would have gone home that night, the whole building would have been gone the next morning. Wow. Because it was that much. But what's crazy is they sprayed it and we did, the desk there is soot. We have all the doors open and people are coming in. I'm like, come on in for class. They're all like,
don't worry about the soot.
And don't worry about it, embers. Y'all are here. We'll just keep the doors open. She's fine. So come on in. Because what? I mean, it's just a great example of like, you can use that as an excuse to stop living.
Yeah. Mm.
But you know what?
And people could use that as an excuse to stop doing their dream.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
exactly.
So if you weren't in your practice, you could have used any of those things to say, well, I had this dream, but I'm walking away.
Right.
As opposed to actually, as we walk in the direction of our dream, our challenges sometimes get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Totally.
So that we can hold more. And through your response to these things, the example that you get to be to your students.
Totally. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's true. It's like once we decide to play big, we get some...
Everything gets bigger.
Everything gets bigger.
Everything.
And it's like
you'll
are you
get
sure?
deep into your relationship with everything, right?
Right. You sure you want to play this game?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you lots of things to make you doubt that you want to play this game. It's almost like our resolve gets tested.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yes.
To see how much we want it. Because there's a lot of people that want it.
Yeah.
Are you willing to go big? Yeah. Are you willing to see that not everything is a personal, you know, affront on your dream?
Right.
Like, I'm going to give you, because not everybody can get it.
Yeah.
Only the people that are willing to say, I'm going. Right? No matter what.
Christy,
no matter what.
If our listeners are freaking out right now and they're
which
like,
they
I
are.
Have to find her.
She's mine. She's
woman.
Mine.
Can you tell people how to find you and what you are creating?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I would love to do that. So I have a yoga studio in Burbank, yogablend.com.
It's the best. You must go.
Please. There's so many great teachers there. I live part-time in Nashville to be with my family, and I'm creating a little mini retreat center there that people can come do this transformational work, whether for a week or a weekend. And then the studio has trainings and things like that. So I go back and forth, and I'm on the website. You can email me. You know, I'm doing lots of different things and
if you
retreats,
ever want
trainings.
Christy to do anything, I'm good at convincing her to do things.
Oh, totally. I'll do anything
really,
for Natalie.
I really wanted to do my 300-hour training and I wasn't in LA, so I made her do it online
she
so
did.
I could do it.
There were a few of them that were like, okay, so this needs to happen, and Natalie started it.
Yeah,
she was like, and then others were like,
we're doing that. Mm-hmm. So if you want to check out Christy, check out the Yoga Blend website. Do you have a personal website?
Yes,
as well?
ChristyMarsden.com, ChristyMarsden.com.
And we'll put that in the promo so you can find her. Thank you.
Yes, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, I love you
and
both
this
so
could,
much.
This could
I
be
love,
a 10-hour podcast.
I was like, this is, by the way, this is just like
this is part one.
Can we totally do part two?
Ongoing
I can sit
conversation.
And talk to you both for hours.
Yes.
For hours.
Yes.
I feel like we've just scratched the surface.
Well, next time we're in LA.
Perfect.
We'll do it all again.
Okay.
Yeah.
So please check out Yoga Blend. Check out Christy. She will change your life. And thank you for being with us. And
oh
thank
my
you
gosh.
For changing mine.
I know. I feel
you.
Like you've already changed some lives for our listeners
Aww.
Today. And for us being here, getting to hear your wisdom.
Oh
thank
my
you
gosh.
So much.
You're so
thank
welcome.
You.
And thank you both. I appreciate what you're doing out in the world, too. And it's big stuff. And you're just so needed. And so thank you for doing your stuff, too. That's how it works. You're welcome and thank you. All relationships
Woo!
Should be that way.
Yes.
You're welcome and thank you.
Thank you,
listeners. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at the Create Play Group. And if you want to join our Facebook page, thecreatecommunity.com. And what else do we want to tell you? Visit our website, www.thecreateseries.com. We have an awesome online course there. We have a retreat in Paris that you might want to join.
What?
There's a few happening.
Yes.
And if you like this podcast, please pass it on and share it with someone you love. Keep the conversation going.
Bye.
Woo!
If you want to know about the Create Workshop Series, you can go to
www.thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to know more about us, you can go to kristenhenge.com or
natalieroy.com.
And if you want to come to Create, you can go to
the Actors Green Room in New York City. And it is Sunday nights from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And their website is www.theactorsgreenroom.com. And you can buy Create on demand if you don't live in New York City.
Woohoo!